You deployed recently to the Democratic Republic of the Congo for the Ebola outbreak. So tell me, what does an epidemiologist do exactly?
Oh, that's a it's going to be such a tough one to answer.
But if you were at a party and someone said, so what do you do? And you said, I'm an epidemiologist, and their eyes go blank.
So an epidemiologist is somebody who is trying to understand why people get diseases, what might be the risk factors for that, what explains the patterns of disease in a population. The focus of this outbreak was very much around Itipo and Iboko, which are very rural areas. Villages spread dozens or hundreds of kilometers apart, and navigating between these areas can prove very difficult. The roads are very poor. Sometimes there's no equipment for moving. So bringing in vehicles was a very important first step. Importation of dozens of motorbikes to allow for transport within this area. Now, there were teams of dozens of contact tracers that would go out each day in all of the different sites. And this was one of the major activities of the response, because if you're going to interrupt transmission, you have to early identify those contacts that are developing symptoms, that are becoming cases. And each day they would review the work they need to do, and they would go out on typically motorbikes, rugged motorbikes adapted for very rough terrain. And they might be driving 2 to 3 to 4 hours to get to see a particular contact or group of contacts that are very remote. And there they would identify where these people are living, explain the reason that they're doing their work, explain what is Ebola, and explain everything that needs to be explained in order to get informed consent. And thereafter, they would make this journey every day and collect certain information from these contacts. Are they showing any signs and symptoms that might be related to or indicative of being a suspect case for Ebola? For example, fever or headache or vomiting or diarrhea. For a disease like Ebola, it's very important to try and identify and follow up all of the contacts, because a single contact that is missed might perpetuate the chain of transmission. And in a very rural setting like Equator province, this can then carry on through several rounds, and you might have a hidden cluster of Ebola cases, and this can perpetuate the outbreak for much longer.
So often in outbreaks, in the last few years especially, we've talked a lot about the role of anthropologists, for example, in gaining the trust of local communities and also local workers, researchers and so on. How do you go about gaining people's trust when you're in the field, and do you rely on local contacts, or if there isn't an anthropologist present, how would you go about gaining people's trust?
Well, firstly, I would say that it's become increasingly clear to me and to others as well that the work of social scientists and anthropologists, community mobilizers, and that whole section of the work that's being done in an outbreak situation, for example, with Ebola, but also diphtheria in Bangladesh, was a situation where we had the need for people who could communicate very well with the local population. We're increasingly understanding that this is a vital component of any successful response. I think it was largely neglected prior to the Ebola response in West Africa, but there we saw very, very serious repercussions where there was no trust on the side of the community, the situation could become very dangerous and very violent. But also the success of the program, of the response, requires the buy-in from the local communities themselves. In order for there to be a successful response, people need to change their behaviours. If there's unsafe burial practices, for example, people need to adapt their behaviour, and so they need to make the decision to do so. Similarly, if there's a vaccination campaign, there needs to be trust that this vaccine, there needs to be understanding about what the vaccine does, and there needs to be trust that that's what it will do. And that you can't always assume that that will be there. And so the work of social scientists is incredibly important. And I'm now convinced that among the first wave of people that need to go in are those social scientists, those anthropologists who can speak with the communities, understand their perspectives, and find the right way to communicate with them.
So they're kind of paving the way for the epidemiologists to come after.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, there's work that everybody can do from the very beginning, but it would be, I think, now seen as foolish to go charging in with an idea of what you want to do without first getting the community's buy-in and understanding how the community is seeing the intervention, the disease, and working within that framework to ensure that the traditional leaders and the people that speak for the community and any particular key groups within the community that might be missed or somehow excluded are also involved in this discussion.
So when you're helping respond in a country like DRC, where they're dealing with multiple outbreaks already, and they probably will continue to be dealing with multiple outbreaks, how does that change the nature of the response to something like Ebola?
Yes, that's right. We were responding to Ebola while there was a concurrent cholera outbreak or multiple cholera outbreaks in DRC. And it does make it very challenging because you are, for one thing, repurposing resources that are required for a response to other diseases, simply because sometimes there aren't enough resources in country. So I know that we were using some of the staff, for example, that had been involved in the cholera response and thinking, okay, well, we can't focus everything on one disease. We do need to keep an eye on these other life-threatening conditions. One positive aspect about that issue is that a country like the Democratic Republic of Congo has become very familiar with responding to these types of outbreaks, and they've built up their own capacity, their own strengths. So whereas in some countries where they have a sporadic outbreak of something that requires an international response, their national capacity might be very weak. But in a country like DRC, they've got many field epidemiologists, many experienced people. I met some national staff this time who've responded to every single outbreak of Ebola, all 9 Ebola outbreaks in the DRC dating back to the 70s when it was first discovered. So capacity does exist in country, and that that's a very positive thing. As I was saying, the negative is that you might be repurposing. You need to keep an eye on what else is happening in the epidemiological profile of the country. DRC is a vast country. They have many, many conditions that you don't see elsewhere. In fact, you see in the last 12 months outbreaks of monkeypox, of rabies, cholera, measles, Ebola. So there's a lot going on, and you need to be aware that although we're focusing on one highly visible disease such as Ebola, and we all remember what happened in West Africa from 2014 onwards, so there's a feeling that we must respond and respond with sufficient force to an outbreak like Ebola, but we mustn't lose track of the fact that cholera kills many, many thousands.